Hello, my name is Sig Bup, and you are listening to Miscellaneous Radio Theater 4096. In this episode, we're going to be talking about how to teach kids math with
Petunia. My name is Petunia. I help children to develop their excitement about all kinds of scientific and mathematical concepts. And you sprout little engineers and mathematicians just like you do a flower. You pour a lot of water on them.
You pour a lot of water.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what you do.
Petunia and I sit on our couch with a couple of microphones in hand, pulled from a couple of headphones that you wear around your head to talk on the internet. And I've been looking forward to doing an interview with her for some time because her excitement for teaching seems to be very heartfelt. Let's just listen and see what she has to say. So you are a mechanical engineer by trade, and I understand you're
not
also...
Not exactly. My education is mechanical engineer. I feel I do a disservice to engineers everywhere by claiming to be a mechanical engineer by trade. It really is a lifelong training process, and I kind of chose not to go into that because I felt my own skills weren't really along those lines. So I decided to change my path into something that I thought I would do a better job of doing and would enjoy doing a whole lot more.
Okay, cool. Cool bean. So that's teaching children, I take it.
I actually have always really enjoyed helping my classmates. That was something that I almost always did, was I would help the other kids with the homework. Like, it was a way of reinforcing it. It helped me develop verbal abilities, and I think it made people accept me a little bit more. Like, I felt a little uncomfortable being the smartest person in class a lot of the time, and I felt like if other people felt like they were as smart as me, that they would like me more.
Yeah.
So it was sort of a survival mechanism for me.
Huh. That's kind of interesting, to be honest with you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So I started doing this mentoring program, and I worked with this really sweet 9-year-old girl. I started working with her almost a year ago now. And she just showed so much curiosity and interest in mathematical concepts, and when we started talking about what she wanted to accomplish this year, she said that she was really uncomfortable with scientific concepts, and that surprised me because she has such a strong logical mind. And as we started talking, it sounded like a lot of her math classes, she's just not really getting enough information or something. You know, it's like they aren't helping her to connect the dots between the different units that they're working on. So, you know, she works on decimals, but she's not figuring out how to relate that to percentages, or she's working on fractions, but she doesn't know what that means to be a decimal and a fraction at the same time. She doesn't know how to express those two things. And really, it's really important to understand the concept of the number. I mean, the number is just a symbol. Really, it's a tangible amount, and it's a way to communicate that amount. And then feeling more comfortable with numbers lets you manipulate it in all kinds of interesting ways. So algebra is a tool to learn to manipulate numbers, and calculus is a tool to learn to manipulate numbers. And you use that in all kinds of ways to analyze the world around you. And you use that in biology and computer science and all kinds of other stuff. And the problem is, I mean, like, children end up missing out on these vital building blocks at this young age, and they never get it back. So that's what I want to do. I want to fix that problem.
Okay, cool. Now, the problem that you expressed with your mentee, do you think this is a common problem for kids?
Yeah, I definitely think it is. And And a lot of it just has to do with the way that we teach our children. I mean, we do so much memorization, but we aren't always doing a good job of explaining what they're really learning, the concepts that they're learning to understand. Most children, when they're doing times tables, aren't learning what 3 times 8 really means. They're calculating an area. Excuse me. They're calculating an area, but nobody really explains to a child what that means, and then we expect them to be able to read a story problem and figure out what kind of math they need to do to solve it. It just doesn't make any sense.
So, would you go so far as to say that there isn't, children aren't learning the language of math? If that makes sense. Children
exactly.
aren't learning to communicate math, but rather they're learning, this is how you find this of this, but they're not learning
exactly.
the underlining,
exactly.
underlying and symbology of it.
Yeah, and the problem is that a lot of the time they don't even understand the question. So, you know, if a child doesn't understand the question in the first place, how do you expect them to give you the right answer? You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's just like getting them to develop this curiosity in a way to relate to the world around them in a way that uses numbers. So it's just kind of learning a different language. You know, I mean, we use English to kind of communicate our cultural values and that kind of thing to one another, and we need to figure out how to do more math communication.
I don't know how it was for you, but it seemed everyone that I knew was deathly afraid of math.
Yeah.
Except for the few people, but they were the dorks, and everyone really, like, they were abnormal in the sense
right.
that the majority of people
right.
seemed to be afraid of math.
Yeah, almost everybody was afraid of math. I wasn't one of those people, and I guess I'm just really lucky in that way. I keep moving my microphone away from my, or I keep moving my mouth. It's hard for me to stay still. And I think that's part of the problem is like you're sitting kids in front of a chalkboard and showing them a bunch of numbers and saying 1 + 1 = 2, 2 + 2 = 3. Like, that's just the wrong way to teach a child to do anything, you know? I mean, you need to put sticks in front of them and say, what happens if you count 2 sticks, you know? And then, you know, put the sticks together, but tell me how many you think it's going to be, and then how many is it? You know, that's how to teach a child how to add 2 + 2. It's not to write it on a chalkboard.
Are you saying it's too, our approach is too abstract for children,
yes,
for kids?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay. What's, why do you think it's so abstract? Why do you think, we haven't been approaching this in more of a textile way with children? It would seem fairly obvious that you would have to do that with any sort of anything that you want to teach. But
yeah, I think that it's just that a lot of cognitive dissonance has built up.
Were we all, like, attacked by numbers when we were in, like, a previous life? Was the...
No,
The mobile above your crib, did it fall down and it had numbers on it? You're like, oh no, a 5!
I think
deathly afraid of 5s for the rest of your life.
You know, I think if I answer this question, I'm going to turn into an anti-establishmentarianist or something. I'm not even really sure what that means. I think it's just a disestablishmentarianist.
Okay.
Yes.
What's wrong with that? Well, what's your... Okay, before... Oh, what's your answer?
Well, I just think that the institution of education kind of sprung up without us really thinking about the different dynamics that actually existed in society, and to consider that in our approach to how we were teaching our children.
Yeah.
A Victorian thought was very supportive of rational thought, and children tend to be very irrational. Rational thought processes and behaviors are something that people have to learn in order to engage themselves in polite human society. Victorians just thought that, you know, children were, you know, little better than wild animals, and that, you know, that they were to be seen and not heard, and they would, you know, beat them and do all kinds of things to remind them that they were to be subjugated. You know what I mean?
So are you saying that we're relatively new at teaching children?
We're new at looking at teaching from the perspective of how children learn rather than what we think of their horrible, horrible behavior.
And adults learn differently, you would presume that?
Yeah. I've actually found that my teaching methods do not work past a certain age. Past a certain age, they just frustrate and annoy, which is part of the reason why I want to work with children. I think that, I mean, part of it is just that it becomes a lot more difficult to learn. At a really young age, children are, I mean, they're like sponges. They're curious about everything. And if you'll give them an open-ended assignment, they'll really blossom into it and get very, very excited about it. When I was a child, I loved to experiment. I mean, I liked to make my own shampoo and conditioner and, you know, do little chemistry projects that way. And I was lucky enough to have, you know, a mom who kind of made my development her job, and she would call the school and nag them into getting me into special programs and stuff. And, you know, a lot of people don't have that to offer their kids, so I'm gonna do it for them.
Would you say that we generally, as a society, as we as a people, kind of having a collective knowledge about certain things, knowledge about teaching and things like this, do you think that our knowledge we have of how humans learn, how kids learn, is adequate, but then it's the teaching establishment that doesn't allow this to happen? Or do you think it's inadequate?
You know, it's really funny because most of what I'm learning is the most effective thing to do, and I'm basing this on the training that I got when I started out this mentoring program. We did a 2-day training where we got started to think about what a child needs in order to be in a healthy learning environment and how to meet those needs. You know, I mean, obviously a lot of children need things that are out of our control, but if we can meet the needs in that instance, and, you know, and some of the ways that they do this in this program is they give them something to eat, you know, so they're not hungry, because being hungry will make a child act out, just like it makes me a little grouchy, and probably you too. And then, like, working one-on-one with an adult also helps them very much. Everybody kind of develops a relationship with, you know, there's a mentor-mentee relationship that develops between the two people that is really pretty special, I think. excuse me. And then the other thing you learn to do is to ask them questions. You get them to learn to voice their own opinions, because what children and really everybody in the world is really looking for is for someone to listen to them and be heard.
Yeah.
For someone to ask the meaningful questions to get them to think about themselves and their role in the world and how they want to play it out. So all of this, I mean, asking the children meaningful questions. Oh, and then I also read a book, and I think that it was Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers. I know it was a book by Malcolm Gladwell anyway. Pretty sure.
Okay.
But he was describing the way he observed a Japanese math classroom, and they were working in a completely different way from the way that our math classrooms are taught.
How are they working?
Well, they had a child at the chalkboard trying to solve a math problem while everybody in the class shouted suggestions or just encouragement. So he's like trying to figure out how to solve this problem. He doesn't understand the question. He's trying to figure out this algebra problem with the support of his classmates rather than having the teacher explain how to solve this problem. It's like the child is figuring it out himself and everybody's learning together. It seems like math would be a lot better if you were working with other people and supporting each other into finding your answers rather than like ranking versus like with tests and that kind of thing. Like it forces a really intimidating environment, and people who are a little more bashful about doing math, they get scared right out of it. So that's kind of a problem because the bashful people might be really smart mathematicians. That's kind of the role that I'm kind of hoping to play, to find the shy people and help them to understand that math isn't so scary.
I see. Are you also placing yourself as the person who should find means for kids to teach each other about math as well?
I just think it's really helpful for people to learn that they can support each other into having success. A lot of ways our society makes people think that they're fighting for their own good and not to help other people. And, we're forgetting how to maintain our friendships that way. You know, it's like we really need people to survive, but commercials are trying to teach us that all we really need is Pizza Hut or something, you know?
Yeah. It seems like you personally, you said you had it when you were a kid, you would tutor people with their homework. And you said it was as a means to not be kind of outcast as a smart kid.
Yeah. Right?
But it seems like you probably have conditioned yourself to realize that you need help from one another in order to do things correctly, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's that. And then I also just, I guess I always sort of understood that even though I seem to be a lot better at math than other people, like a lot of other people were much better than I was at other things. And it just seemed like there was something really appropriate about that, you know? But that even if you're a better writer than you are an accountant, it's still good if you understand a little bit of math. So that's kind of what I'm hoping to encourage people.
Do you think the teachers are intimidated by math themselves?
Yeah, they really are. I went to this seminar a couple weeks ago, and the goal of the seminar was to teach elementary educators how to teach elementary school students engineering concepts, because apparently this is going to be added to No Child Left Behind, or maybe it's a state requirement, I'm not entirely sure. But I went to the seminar and I was so excited because I'm an engineer, and I was thinking, wow, you know, like we're gonna do like really neat engineering projects all day long. And
yeah,
I was
so
really super
excited, yeah.
Like engineering projects for kids, it sounds so fun. And I go to the seminar, and it's a bunch of exhausted, beleaguered elementary education teachers who are like, I don't even know what an engineer is. How am I supposed to teach engineering concepts to my students? Like, I can see every single one of them panicking inside of their heads. And I was so frustrated. I wanted to shake my fist at everybody and shout, this is supposed to be fun. And then, like, after that day, I came back and was trying to help my student with her fractions, and it turns out she doesn't even know how to do division. It's like they're trying to get her to learn all these fractions and she doesn't know how to divide two numbers. It just doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of what really made me want to become an educator, because I feel like I've worked with so many people on how to understand different subjects. I mean, like, it wasn't just math. Like, I'd help people with everything, chemistry or English or whatever needed help with, you know. And like, the thing is that if you can relate a concept that a person doesn't understand to something that they're already interested in and passionate about, you can get someone to understand anything. So, you know, it's like stoichiometry, which in chemistry is the concept of balancing a chemical equation. So that's how you figure out how much of these three different ingredients chemically are required to make these two outputs. And I related that to music because that was the one thing this guy in my high school chemistry class understood, you know. But it was like,
do you understand
need,
it?
Well, you need to, yeah, it's like you need to have this many notes in a measure, and you need to have this many notes in a measure, and it's the same thing.
Yeah, that's hilarious. No offense or anything.
But, you know, I mean, you can do that with all kinds of different things. And like, that's what I want to do is to, you know, I mean, 4 days out of the week we do math concepts, but we do math games, you know. I mean, like, to help my student understand fractions, I had this spinny wheel game, and she spins the wheel and she makes her fraction based on where the arrow ends up. The numerator ends up one place, and then the denominator ends up one place.
Yeah.
And it's
a pretty good game, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's so simple, you know, but they didn't have anything like this. And so she calculates the fraction, and then she figures out what the decimal is, and then she gives herself that many cents.
Yeah.
And like, all the kids really enjoy playing it because they really like to play with the money. We all laughed about the phrase that says not legal tender. The one student asked what that meant, and I said that means that if you took it to the store that they would laugh at you.
But, yeah, I remember getting kicked out of that for Monopoly money, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I don't know why exactly. Like, I just realized
like
that
somehow
now
they're legally required to stamp that on their fake money.
Well,
as though anybody would think that that was real money. Although there is that scene in The Wire where the guy takes Monopoly money and with his $20 bill, it's okay. But That's television. Don't believe the TV, kids.
Yeah. No, kids. No, don't believe the TV. I don't think any kids will be. Maybe there will be. Who knows?
Adults don't believe the TV.
One thing that
you aren't gonna back me up on that.
Kind of. No, don't believe the. Don't believe the TV. One thing I've noticed. This is kind of stepping back in the conversation a little bit, but even with adults, like I got in this. I don't want to say argument. I got in this conversation with someone. And
heated conversation, that's how I like to refer
a
to it.
Heated conversation. And I had a point and he had a point. And I would listen to his point, I would express my point. And then I don't think I was listening to his point exactly, and I don't think he thought that I was listening to his point. So I wouldn't be able to express my point without him going back to his point.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, just to stop and say, I see what you're saying. You're saying this, and you're saying this, and that's very problematic, because he's saying this is very problematic because of this and this and this. I'm saying that is very unfortunate, but we can do this. And so, like, that reiterating of what people are saying, I think, is fairly helpful, probably for children as well as adults.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you are listening to them, you know exactly what they're saying.
Right, yeah, one of the...
And this is what I'm saying.
Right, yeah, one of the concepts is to facilitate a classroom discussion, you have an open-ended subject, and the way that they taught it to us was we looked at a painting, and the first thing you say is, what is going on in this picture? And I mean, like, and you can adapt that phrase in a lot of different ways, but it's important not to limit it to what you see. The presenter said that at a certain age, children start to develop their own opinions about things, and then they can tell you more than just what they see. But if you ask what they see, they're going to tell you what they see. So rather than telling you, oh, well, I see this woman and she's walking down the street, like, you're going to hear them say, well, I see a hat, I see a dog, I see a cart. You know, you aren't going to hear a narrative as much. So the first question is, what is going on in this picture? And then the second question, aspect is to basically repeat back what the person said, to say, okay, so you're saying this, and then ask them what makes you say that, so that they give some kind of justification. And then the third piece is to ask what else other people noticed in the picture. So that's a way to help the person who's speaking feel validated, and also help everyone else to feel that there's still more to see in the picture, that this person hasn't necessarily given the correct interpretation of what's in the painting or whatever.
Yeah. It's a very healthy way to have a conversation about a painting.
Isn't that nice? So I've tried to change the way that I interact with people to ask more of those questions.
You get very far. Like, I have too.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say recently, but within the last few years.
It really helps communication.
Helps communication a lot.
Yeah. One of the things that they counsel against is to not use any questions that start with why, because there's an implied judgment.
Mm.
So it tends to make people feel defensive. Whereas, you know, they may have a perfectly logical reason for thinking that the way that they do or acting
like,
the way that they do.
Like, what do you mean? Like, well, why do you think this? Is that what
you're
saying?
Right, like saying, why do you think that? Like, do you see how my brow automatically furrows itself? Like, well, why would you ever think that, you know? And I did have an English teacher in high school who employed a method that was very similar to this one. And we had great conversations, and every once in a while someone would bring up a theme in a book that she hadn't previously explored, and you could see her pause and kind of evaluate it in her head, like she was thinking, wow, does that really even make sense to me? And then she would say, well, what makes you say that? And then they would give their explanation, and it kind of increased everyone's interpretation of the book a little bit, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So I've really seen how that can be a very effective way to have a really good discussion, and I think that does a really good job of reinforcing people's own knowledge and awareness. I mean, like, that's kind of one of the things that I think people really enjoy about the I Report and that kind of thing that's on CNN now, where people roll their eyes.
That's the I Report.
Oh, okay. CNN has started taking reporting from everyday citizens. So people will film themselves doing this or the other thing. It's basically a recognition of the concept that media outlets are pretty much obsolete at this point. You know, it's like anybody can take a camera, go out and take some film and put it on the internet.
Yeah.
And probably reach almost as many people as CNN.com. Potentially, you know, I mean, depending on how viral it gets. I mean, think about the people who made that kitten, the giggle kitten, the tickling kitten. Have you seen that? We're gonna have to look at the tickle kitten in a minute.
All right.
It's super duper cute. I won't do it because we're recording and it's a visual thing, but it's like,
oh, they reenacted the tickle kitten or the kittingos.
But the real one.
The real one.
There's a real one.
I know there's a real one.
Like, with the real kitten.
Yeah,
I've seen really does it.
Have I've seen, seen the real kitten? I've seen the real one first.
Okay, get him.
Yeah, it is pretty cute. It's really cute.
It's impossible to be upset at all when that's happening.
Yeah, it really is.
It's so funny.
If you ever get in a heated conversation with someone, that would be a good means to completely end it.
Tickle kitten.
They'll watch it for a couple minutes and forget what we're talking about. What were we talking about? No, seriously, what were we talking about?
Well, I was saying that, you know, the owners of that kitten They're probably just, you know, some people in Ohio or something. You know what I mean? Like,
so CNN is doing this thing.
Right. Like, just, like, taking submissions from people all over. And part of it is, like, curiosity about, like, hurricane victims and that kind of thing. Like, they want to hear from actual people. And I think, like, people are starting to recognize that... that's who they really want to hear from. They don't want to hear from someone like, oh, well, I'm standing right here and it looks real crappy, you know? Like,
yeah.
Looking at the radar, these guys are up. Like, you know, they don't want to hear from that person. They want to hear from the people who are inside of the houses, like, trying to survive this stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But these days with the internet, like, as long as they've got a Wi-Fi signal, they can pretty much do it themselves. So, I mean, like, citizen journalism, I mean, let's make it happen, people. We can do it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's the only way we're ever going to get some truth out there, because media is owned by huge corporate conglomerations.
And
huge,
sort of...
huge corporate conglomerations.
In relation to teaching, I forgot our train of thought, but were you saying that this...
I want to empower people, and I think I think that teaching is a tool to give people power.
Mm.
Because people are more powerful than they think, but the difficulty is time, and unfortunately we have so many distractions these days that everyone's forgetting to think about how little time they have to really accomplish what they want to do in their lives. So, yeah, I mean, every day goes by and it's a day less.
Yeah.
That we have.
Why do you think math is especially a problem?
Math is objective. And you can communicate it very simply to anyone. It's a way to rebuild our civilization no matter what happens.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to know math.
I agree. but it's not being taught properly. It's not being listened to properly. It's not...
Mm-mm.
People aren't involving math in their life.
People don't respect how much math can contribute to their quality of life, and
yeah.
I think that a lot of it has to do with television and marketing.
It's the same thing with, I personally feel it's the same thing with the computer. For instance, like, I don't know, it seems like people, the computer, the way it's being taught nowadays is it's being mystified. Like math is being mystified. Maybe not in the same way that math is being mystified, but a computer is becoming this mysterious box that has some sort of dark magic in it.
Leave it to the experts.
Leave it to the experts. But the experts didn't build the computer. The experts, like, a lot of computer stuff has a history with people.
I was really interested to find out that Bill Gates was a poser who, like, stole everyone else's ideas. I thought that was hilarious. He's worshipped by the media, you know what I mean? It's like he's this god because he came up with Windows. But...
it's kind of sad listening to we watched this video, and I forget the name of the person who wrote the logo, but you guys know Logo, right? Logo was this teaching language that was developed in the 70s, I think it was, or something like that. And it was a computer language to teach kids. And what a cool concept, teaching kids computer languages.
Totally cool.
Yeah, people don't think that way anymore today. You can't teach kids computer languages.
Seriously,
what are you talking
about?
They're
like, children are stupid, don't you know?
Exactly.
Children are stupid.
Yeah.
Because we've, like, lost the ability to meet a child's needs, and it's like, and I just feel like everybody who's, like, laid off and doesn't have anything to do, go volunteer in a classroom, like, contribute your knowledge every single day. Like, every day you're not using your knowledge and sharing it with people is a wasted day. So time's a wasting.
Yeah,
hackers, This is who I'm talking to, right?
Yeah, this is exactly
Hello,
who you're
hackers.
To.
It's Petunia. This is your conscience speaking. You should log out of that website.
Yeah.
Turn off the porn.
Quit typing read the fucking manual in the IRC chat room to the newbies.
Have you heard JFGI?
JFGI.
Just effing Google it.
No. Just fucking Google it.
I say just F Google. That's what I say.
I think the hacker community is very welcome to teaching people.
Yeah, I mean, like, there is a little bit of an elitism that I think
a little bit. Yeah, but it's not so bad. I mean, like, if you go to any sort of HackerCon, people there are just really friendly. I mean, there's some elitist people, but the people who are too elitist usually don't know what they're talking about,
right.
I've noticed. So.
Yeah, they're bragging to hide their marketability. Awkward.
Yeah.
Awkward. We just called you out. Awkward. Anyway, sorry. I'm sorry. I'm getting so crazy over here. Hanging out with teachers is a really happy experience, too. It's like everybody wants to communicate and share strategies and stuff. So.
What's it like hanging out with teachers?
It's really, really geeky.
It's really geeky?
my friend Sarah, who I was hanging out with yesterday, is an educator, actually. And I could tell because she had all of these eyeshadows that she was sharing or giving away, right? And so I picked out the ones that I wanted, and she pulled out all these tiny little plastic baggies, and she labeled them with stickers so that I'll know what they're all called so that I can order them from the website later.
Aww.
Like, that is what an educator's work looks like. Very organized and well-labeled. Mm. You learn to take notes.
I've noticed that there are certain type of people who I am... Like Maury, for instance. You guys don't know Maury, of course, but there are certain personalities I think kids are drawn to, and I think adults are drawn to as well. That there's a certain warm, inviting sort of personality that some people have.
Yeah.
Where you just want to, like... You know, like, they will be kind and they will share things with you.
Right, yeah, definitely.
So I think that's important.
Yeah, Maury is a really special individual. And I think the program that I got involved with, I got so lucky. I mean, it's just such a great program. And I'm learning a ton. And I really hope that I can share it and export so much of my knowledge to other people so I can help as many people as possible.
As far as teaching... in general is concerned, and the future of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
What needs to change? What are we doing that's good?
Well,
what also needs to
We just need to open it up a lot more. I don't want to hate on teachers. Teachers are some of the hardest working people in the world. We just need to open it up a lot more. It's like, we got so limited, because of, like, the idea of No Child Left Behind, and let me just complain about No Child Left Behind for 1 second here. Okay, so we have...
Take all the time you want.
Okay, alright, thanks. Okay, so we have this law that our Venerable W passed a few years ago called No Child Left Behind. And this law states that in order to determine that children are indeed learning the things that we are trying to teach them in class, we are going to test them, and if they do not pass this test with a high enough percentage of the children in their school passing this test, we will close their school.
Yeah.
Does that sound motivating or what?
Okay. That sounds threatening.
It sounds horrible. The idea of closing a school because they aren't able to get their children's test scores up to par is just the most ludicrous thing for the children. I mean, we are trying to teach the children here, right?
Yeah.
We aren't trying to punish the teachers. We aren't trying to punish the like neighborhood. We're trying to teach children, and if we're going to teach children, we need to look at how we're teaching them and whether there's a way that we can change it to be more effective. You know, if we aren't having success, then maybe we aren't doing it quite right. But I don't think closing the school is ever really the right answer. You know what I mean? So I'm hoping to be able to demonstrate success with my methods. And then to be able to export it to as many places as possible. There really isn't any reason why all of the teachers in the country are scrambling to come up with ways to meet their children's needs. I mean, we've been teaching first graders for hundreds of years. It should be simpler by now.
Mm.
So, you know, I mean, I'm not talking about, like, socializing education. I'm just talking about, like, coming up with really effective ways to teach children across cultural barriers, language barriers, you know, mathematical barriers, whatever. You know, just, like, getting it to be, like, simple, playful, and exploratory, because that way we're tapping into what children are already really, really good at and passionate about. The more ways we can get them up and moving, the fewer times that we're sitting them in rows of seats and having to take notes from a projector. I mean, that's not for elementary school students. That's just not something that they're going to be good at doing. So I want to change the way we look at education.
It seems teaching to me seems kind of like I don't want to call it a craft exactly, but it seems sort of, for someone who is a teacher, kind of, you have to take a lot of, there's a lot of time that you have to take and a lot of trial and error for you to understand how to teach.
Yeah, the way that I'm really going to try and approach it is to tell my students that they're actually going to be teaching me how to teach fourth graders math.
That's cute. Maybe, yeah. Listen, kids.
I'm the one who's really learning today.
Yeah.
So, I'm really excited about what I'm going to be trying to do.
I've always thought that would be I don't know, when I sort of envision myself teaching kids, kind of envision myself doing it in a way where I am someone who can suggest things, but, like, I kind of want to be surprised. Like, maybe they'll, like, no, like, here, right. This is how I do it. I'm going to teach you. Teach me how to do it better. Like, maybe they'll come up with some sort of way to do,
like,
something better.
That's one of the teaching methods that I learned at one of my seminars that I think is going to be really powerful is I think maybe it is Malcolm Gladwell, because he has this book called Blink about how to tap into your intuition, and that's kind of one of those things, is like figuring out a way to suggest the answer to the child in a way that they're figuring out the answer for themselves is the real trick to teaching.
Mm.
So I'm hoping to facilitate that in a lot of really open-ended ways.
Okay. Do you think teaching as a profession in general could use sort of a more standardized methodology,
that's what I'm talking about, is like coming up with
how people actually learn
models and representative symbols. I mean, like, I have this idea for a series of posters that really demonstrate what addition, subtraction, and multiplication and division are in terms of gridded squares, because I think that a lot of people just really don't understand the concept, and I think that that's kind of what causes the problem with, you know, where people aren't sure how to figure out how to budget and stuff. You know, I mean, like, you can do all of that very simply with the use of Excel, but if you don't know the basics of, like, tallying the stuff you're adding, tallying the stuff you're subtracting, you know, if that is too abstract for you, then you're really going to struggle with a whole lot of different problems later in life.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that teaching isn't a scientific study.
It's starting to be, though. It's like there are starting to be, like, cognitive people who are interested in
the field of meso interrupts. This is
way
far fetched, right? But the field of artificial intelligence has been stagnant for years and years and years. And the term artificial intelligence itself I have a problem with, because artificial, and it doesn't work out, the goal of it is not right. And I think What a cool goal for artificial intelligence research, especially with the development of quantum computers, hopefully in the future, which will solve like all search complexity problems and sort of push the artificial intelligence work forward a little bit. But I think the goal should not be to make a computer that can think. I think the goal should be to figure out how our brains learn. Know exactly how our brains learn. Have a model of how our brains learn.
I wrote a short story about a futuristic colony on the moon, and one of the concepts was that learning happened not by sitting in a classroom, but you would go to a place where they would put a silicone implant in a particular memory center of your brain, and you would be able to access it like a hard drive.
Pretty sweet, right? Yeah. On the moon, things tapped into your brain.
Okay. Do you mind if we pause this interview, though, because Leverage is about to start?
We can close it. I think we're... Do you want to be done? I think we're done.
I could talk more, so I'll leave it open-ended, but we have about 10 seconds to start watching Leverage before my window closes.
What was your handle again?
I'm going to edit this up. Petunia, signing off.
Wait, hold on. All right, well, thank you, Petunia, for your thoughts on teaching.
Hey, you know, anytime you would like to have me back, I'll bend your ear lots more about how other people are doing it wrong.
Okay,
it's one of my favorite subjects.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net. So head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.